Well, good morning again. So glad you're here today. And what a beautiful day it is. High today is going to be 83. High tomorrow, I think, is either 76 or 77. I was trying to remember a time in my adult life that's been like that. But actually, in my childhood, we actually had four seasons in Savannah. You'd have four distinct seasons, but this is just wonderful weather. The flowers have lasted so long this year. It's been wonderful. And happy Mother's Day to all of you moms. The Lord bless you. John, you got that cartoon? Can you put it up there? I thought that this cartoon, John found this, is very, very appropriate. One right there. That's about how it is too. In all the things that go on in the world, I was reading this article. This lady, and she was talking about the things that mother's spit can do, and. And you think about that, getting hair down, cleaning a face, that's right. That's right. God just created it that way. Question today is that we're going to consider is, why are life groups important? But before we can get to that question, before you can get to the answer, I believe you have to get to the, what is the problem? What is the situation? You know, we look at our world today, and we see where things are. We see where the church is, and one thing's for certain, business as usual can't go on like it is. I'm going to bring some things to your attention today, and I hope you'll look at the whole of it with me. And I want you to consider these today. Consider all the aspects of your life and how these things touch your life. And there, before we get to the question of why are life groups important, where's our culture headed right now? We as a Western culture, we as the United States of America, we as a people who have a common heritage together. Yes, it's diverse, it has many parts to it, but where is it? Where is it headed right now? I want you to consider these things. A lot of ways we can answer that question. But remembering this, what is Acts 20:20 again? We said we got that 20/20 vision, and that's they met both publicly and house to house. Now, as we consider this, as we begin this question and we begin to look at the culture today, I want you to see how easy it would be to manipulate this part, the publicly part. How difficult it is for the house-to-house component of the church to be manipulated. Let me give you an example. In China today, y'all saw this. This happened a couple of years ago. You know, they have the government-sanctioned three-self church. When you see three-self church and all, what that is, that's the government-approved version of how church is expressed this way, publicly. And I think you can see in some arenas that we're not, you know, that there are some areas where our government over the years now, the decades that we've seen, where we've seen some intrusion into this. And unless you're just got your head in the sand somewhere and think it's not happening, there are congressmen, there are people in our country right now who have bills that they've written that would do away with how we express ourselves here, with the what we have enjoyed as what we call the freedom of religion and our free speech, because it doesn't fit into their particular ideology of how things ought to be. But in China, where they attacked was on the publicly side, because they had more people. That was the big group. The house-to-house portion, for the longest time, they couldn't stamp it out. They couldn't come in and dictate, this is how you're going to be, because they never could get their hands around it, because the groups were small enough that they could move to this place, and they were not formalized, so you couldn't put an edict down. Now, this part of it is being affected in our nation in some ways right now. With so many churches that have gone to meeting in small groups, you may have seen this. Some communities have enacted ordinances. And how have they attacked that? Anybody know? But have they attacked it? Parking on the streets. Parking on the streets. Yes, sir. There are places, there are communities where they say, you can't gather here for this. Now, they say, well, we're not attacking the church. Well, it isn't because of PTA meetings. It isn't because of Amway meetings. It's because of church meetings. That has happened already in some places around. Now, is it rampant? No. But it is something that we've got to be mindful of, and we want to see how it goes. So I give you this kind of as a teaser to begin with, so we can talk about culture. Where's our culture headed right now? I just picked out 10 things. These are ones I just rattled off. I mean, just bang, 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 bang. I could have given you 30. I could have given you 40, 50 of these. And you'll think of some that probably are more obvious than these, and that's fine. The thing about all of these is there's a commonality about all of these. I think you'll see that. The first one is this. We see a devaluing of personhood, of people, of humanity in our culture. Now, and I'm saying that, I'm operating, these are all operating of things in my lifetime that I've observed. None of these are things I've read out of a book. None of these things that I studied in a course that I took somewhere where some egghead taught me this, whichever direction he happened to be on the intelligence scale, where he was politically, where he was economically. No, it's none of that. This is just my life. These are things I have observed. Now, why would I say that first one, the devaluing of personhood? Where do we see that? Abortion, primary one. An abomination on this country. They're talking about one day about the looking for people to take certain jobs. the millions of people that were aborted, that were killed. You know where the most dangerous place for a child to be is in our nation? In a mother's womb. That is the most dangerous place. And oh, the convenience that right in. But what are some others? We could spend a lot of time on that one. But what are some other indications of devaluing of personhood? Yep, the thing of euthanasia. I first was exposed to that term when I was, still in high school. And then we had to write a paper or something like that in college on euthanasia. I thought, oh man, you know, we'll truly, you know, we will have really gone to a bad place in our country if that ever happens. Anybody know the number of states that presently practice a form of euthanasia or another? I don't either, but we have several states that actually do that. One more shot. Any other thing comes up? Devaluing of personhood. Sex trafficking. Do you know Savannah? Did you see the thing during St. Patrick's Day week, the big meeting that they had? The sex trafficking, that Savannah, with a connection to Atlanta, is one of the places where children and young people are trafficked in and out of our city. That's happening on a daily basis. Did you know that? It's happening here, right now. It's going on even as we speak right now. That's a devaluing of people and the value of a human life. How valuable is a human life? Must have been pretty valuable if Jesus died on the cross. If there had only been one human life on this earth. A second thing, these are going to become more innocuous, but I think you can see them. Where's our culture headed right now? In our culture, they know everything about you, but they know nothing about you. Why would I say that? Know all these things about you. Know where you live. Know what you like to read. Have you noticed on your how many of you use Yahoo as your homepage on internet? 3 or 4. Have you noticed how those advertisements that are on the side tend to go in line with what some of your interests are? Some places you've been on the internet. Is that a coincidence? They're tracking you, man. They're tracking you. Every stroke you make on the internet is being tracked. Just think about some of the technology that we know we have. Now, let me blow your mind for just a second. This technology we know we have, what technology do you think our government has? Do you think they know you? What's big issue now down on the border, and some of the border states are saying, oh, we've got a problem with this, that there's an issue right now. Drones. What are those drones doing? They're taking pictures. They're spotting you. Right. That's why our government has said, no matter where you are politically, listen, these are not, because one political party is just as guilty as the other political party. One group that's got control of our government is just as guilty. This is something that's been going on for a long time. and more. You know everything about you, but they know nothing about you. In that sense, there's a loneliness. We'll get to that in just a second. A third thing I mentioned, where's our culture headed right now? I say the Facebook world. Okay? The Facebook world. Now, not here to bust on Facebook because a lot of good things Facebook does. But what is it possible to do on Facebook?
Drive them crazy.
Donnie? You can track there. But what has Facebook replaced for a lot of people? Being together. Now, I'm not saying it's just like I'm not saying, hey. Man, we need to get rid of technology. No, we need to control the technology that is in our lives and control the place that has for us. When I was growing up, we didn't have air conditioning. So that changed things substantially. What happened was our windows were open. And our doors were open. We had a screen door, front door, back door, screen door. And we heard one another. And every chance you get during the day, you're not going to be sitting in the hot house. You're going to be where? I mean, now I don't know how you grew up, but after we ate breakfast in the summertime, my mother would push us outside. The next time we got to come in the house was when?
Lunchtime.
And then you stayed outside till supper time, and I can still hear my dad's whistle. He'd do that real life. He could do it for two blocks, and I'd hear that. I didn't need a cell phone. I said, oh. You know, it's just like the dog's ears, you know. Man, you better get home now because it's time to eat supper. And then as you went on, the days got real long, you might even, after supper, you go back outside and play a game of...
Whatever you want.
No, not half. Hide and go seek.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. I know we can go down, and there's several of you sitting here. What is hide and go seek? we'll get to that later. But in the Facebook world, you never have to leave your chair, your couch. But look at all the interaction that you've missed out on. Where's our culture headed? A lack of real intimacy with people. Now, why would I make a statement like that? A lack of real intimacy. Why would I say that? Now, I'm not talking about just between a husband and a wife. That's intimacy. But I mean, really, intimacy, knowing one another. Why would I say that? What do we really know about each other? Do we spend enough time? I love what Dobson said a few years ago. He said, I've gotten tired of people talking about quality time. He said, quality time has become a bane to me. He said, because what people are trying to do is to do all this stuff and then limit this quality time. Oh, I got to get it all done now. In this block of time, he said, why not have quantity time where you can be messy with it? Because what is life anyway? It's very messy. It's very messy. Selfish and self-centered. And, you know, you think of all the crazy views people have right now. But if you're isolated and you're out there and this is your persona out there, and your interaction during the day, and you don't have anybody that's going to call you on the carpet and say, hey, you know, you're really talking crazy. You're really acting weird here. See, in a community, that would happen. You wouldn't have something, you know, you wouldn't have a situation like the emperor's new clothes. You wouldn't be able to go out naked, those of you who missed that illustration, and no one notice. All right? Here's another one. The governmental takeover of all aspects of our lives. One author has called it a womb to the tomb takeover of our lives. Now again, I want to remind you, we're not talking about one party, one political party or another. We're talking about what we've seen over the years. Why would I make a statement like that? Yes, sir. Where there's control over things in your life and even after your life. You know, with taxes, taxing things we never thought of taxing before. And see, the power to tax is the power to control your life. Eventually come in and dictate how you do something. Friend of mine, that they were was telling me this story about a private school that should remain nameless that accepted a program that the government's doing with no strings attached. And what happened? It's always strings. When you accept that, when you crack the door for that, it will come. Now, some people would say that's a good thing. And there may be some good things about government doing things that are good. But the overall part of it is not good because of what happens to personal freedoms in people's lives. What happens to us. And we only need a little history lesson to see what happens for that. And, but see, we've got a memory that's about that long. We need to look at the sweep of history and thinking, oh, things that happen in other countries, they won't happen here. All right, here's another one. The socializing of all, and I'm talking of this in an economic and political sense, the socializing of all parts of our country. Why would I say that? And however you see these things, the political and social things that happen. And again, some of these things might be good for this long. But then what is going to happen on the long run? What's happened over the period of our lives? We correct a wrong in our country with something. But then what are there people there waiting to do when you go to correct a wrong? They're waiting to take advantage of that and crack the door open for many other things. So then you have to measure it. You have to measure it. Let me stop right here and say to you, Why has the government had to get involved in some of these things? Because we've been watching TV. Where was the church? Silent. I mean, let's just take a brief trip back to Dr. King. Why was Dr. King not just invited to all the pulpits in the South and in our country? Oh, man, now you're going to messing around with things, Dusty. Because you see, you had an institution that was perpetuating an evil in our society. There came a fix for that and other things, but then what happens after that? Many other things come. Disobedience. Right there. All right. I know I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you today, but I want you to kind of get a grip on where we are. Here's another one. The normalizing of an amoral society. The normalizing of an amoral society. Why would I make that statement? Calling what is evil good. Saying it's a good thing. When I was in seminary, which was in the late 70s, we never had a class where we talked about marriage and how to do weddings and the virtues of marriage and we talked about divorce and we looked bit, you know, and studied what the scripture had to say about divorce. But in my first pastorate, within 6 months of getting there, I had to deal with an issue that I had never even thought of in my life. I didn't know anything about it because I didn't know anybody in my life that had ever done that. I had a couple that began visiting the church that were living together, not married. And I had to develop a biblical response to that. Then on the one hand, would not just change what the scripture has to say about our lives, but on the other hand, we'll be compassionate. You know, address the sin and love the sinner. Both and let me just say to you, I've studied that issue now for decades. Does living together work? No. I'll give you hundreds of examples of why it doesn't work. And primarily, there's no commitment. There's no commitment. It doesn't work. It doesn't work practically. And yet today, look at our society. 4 years ago, we reached a point where, a tipping point where over half, from that point to now, and it's continuing to drop, of children born in this country were born to a mother who was not married. Now, on one hand, we have compassion and we try to address that problem. On the other hand, we have to address the sweeping normalization of that as saying, that's okay. Is that okay? Something so basic in our lives, that issue. And of course, not dealing with that issue then paves the way for the big issue that is on us right now. Gay marriage. Now, lest you think blow one thing out of proportion and say that, you know, that's not a good thing. That's not a, you know, what, why are you saying that about? Hey, just look at the results in our society. Read the book of Romans. When Paul is illustrating sin in his condemnation part of Romans, chapter 1, read it there and see what it says. I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but I want you to see that. Does that mean there should not be compassion and love? No. It's reaching people. It is sharing the gospel, the good news. The good news that you can change a life. I tell you, bigger one than that, because that particular commandment isn't just about what you say. That is not just what that's about. That would just limit it. It is His name, His authority, taking it in vain. Acting as if He is not the Lord of all. Yes. That's right. That's part of the application of that. Again, though, I ask you, without us becoming, you know, these tremendous legalists over here, where have we been as the church? People's telling me all the time, oh, you know, they put up this paper tiger the church just has all these antiquated views about, particularly on the subject of homosexuality, where they're just denigrating the people. I challenge you to show me those places where they're happening. Yeah, there are a few that may be happening, but what it's an attempt to do is to eliminate all opposition to that. Right now, in every state in the union, I'll shut up on this issue. Every state in the union right now, you could probably pass a domestic partnership law. You could probably do that. But that is not what the gay and lesbian community wants, do they? What they want is for you to say it's right. Which brings me to my next thing, the elimination of sin by definition. Now, I'll probably have to explain this, what I mean. It's using the same vocabulary, but changing the dictionary. Use the same words, but redefine them. And that way, you know, sin, well, if I say as a church that we're for gay marriage, and it's we're going to continue to say it's okay if you live together outside of marriage. We're going to say that certain things are not sin. How different are we from the world? What have we just described for ourselves? What position have we described for ourselves? We've become a club and not the church. not the body of Christ. Right. And not the way God intended. The ninth one is the systematic elimination of God from the public square. Have you seen that recently? How so? How long has that been going on? It's been going on for a long time. And systematically, moving God out of the public square. Any speaking of God, public expressions of that. Yeah, Gary? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. And yet our country, what was our country founded on and by whom? Yeah, yes. I mean, just read the founders. Read it. How we were founded. And because of that, God has blessed us as a country. And yet we have this systematic elimination. Yeah, Bob? Right. Yeah. So. Right. And yet our whole legal system is based upon this right here. This is what it's based on. That's right. That's exactly. Yeah. As we massage it and say things, make statements like, the Constitution is a dynamic document that's ever changing, and that's double speak for meaning. That means I can interpret it. I can make it say whatever I want it to say. To verify what my opinion is. Here's the final one, my tenth one, is the emasculating of the gospel of all of its power. And the reason why I put that one in is when people came to the Lord, you read in the New Testament, you read the book of Acts, you read the letters, when they came to the Lord, there was a power in their lives, and their life changed. It wasn't just the words that they spoke, I'm now a member of this club, but my life is going to continue to be like everybody else's life. No, their lives changed. The power of Jesus Christ changed their lives, so much so that they became different, and there was such love and compassion that came. You look at the things that have happened because of the gospel that has gone forth in the world. Just look in the arts. Look in the art. Look at the Reformation. Look at the Renaissance, and see as the arts came out and you had expressions. It was expressions of the gospel into the public square like it had never been before. And the changed lives of people, that was real. That was real stuff. That was a real change. Literature, the creativity of all that. But when you retreat with the gospel, as the church has retreated now from the public square, in our nation at least, not in all places in the earth, but now, as we've retreated, as we've become more like a club that is set over to the side over here and has these parameters, it's like, yeah, you can do anything that you want to do inside this little box right here. Where's that expression? Do you see a dearth of that in the arts? Of course you do. In literature, in what passes itself off as art today. Music, all the things. Do you get my point here? And maybe that's the one I should have started with without going through all that. Carolyn? Instead of that which is the changed life. That's why, and by the way, here are the test questions to see if what I've just shared with you is true. Has any of the things that I've spoken of not been verified by change over the last 3 or 4 decades? You see, if you're under 30, 25 years old, you have a lack in your life, and the lack is perspective. That's something you can read about it. As I've talked about these things today, these are the things that I've lived. I lived through them. And I'm seeing it. And some of you that are older than me, you can see. And you see, that's something that today, in our culture, that we lack is perspective. We can't remember and see what is happening. It's kind of like the frog in the kettle. Y'all know the illustration of the frog in the kettle? You put him in the pot of lukewarm water, and he thinks it's okay, and he stays in there, and you put him on top of the stove, and you gradually turn up the heat. He becomes ribbit stew. Because it happens so gradual that he won't jump out until it's too late, because he lacks perspective. And that's what knowing our history, knowing what the real, not the redacted history, not the reinterpreted history, not the history that politician A or B would like to take in, those high-sounding guys, in whichever party they're in. They're manipulating you for one thing. What is that? Your vote. They want you to vote for them. Whoever they are. Do these things lack factual data that I've mentioned to you? No, they don't. And here's a good test of them. If I put these things out there, who would be the people that would disagree with them? The hit dog hollers. That's a good way to see how damning they are. Now, I say all that. Where's our culture headed? Where should we be headed? We must. I'm going to leave you with this. We won't finish this today. We must be. That is a modern way of saying we've got to be the antidote. We've got to be salt and light. And the Bible says in Ephesians, I believe it's 4:15, that we should speak the truth in love. We can't fall in the ditch of damning everything that comes along and say, you might as well cash in. People aren't going to listen to you, and you're going to be no good in society, because all you're going to see is all the negative that is out there, and you're not going to see what Jesus wants to do. You're not going to see the power of the gospel, how it can change a life, how it can take a man that was, his life was headed to hell, and now look at his life. Look at who he's become. Look at who he's become with his family. So you speak the truth, but you speak it in love. That's exactly what Jesus did. And we got to be just like Him. Just like Him. And who does that put you in league with when you start living life that way? Not many people. Because most people, want to gravitate, oh, you need to get into this political group. I'm saying to you need to vote. Yes, vote and vote your convictions. But at last, it's not going to be the politicians that are going to change this country. It's going to be the power of the gospel of Jesus and us living it out through our lives and us being the people, being who God has called us to be in the world with love and an openness. And that's what makes today the true church of God is an eclectic collection of people. Because God is the one that's choosing that and not us. It's definitely not cookie cutter. Look around you. Why? We could probably get in an argument about this or that that's going on out in the world, but what brings us together? We know that Jesus has changed our lives, and He wants to change the people around us. We've got to live it out. And that means being part of the solution. Not just part of the problem out there. Anybody can sit over there and cuss at everybody that comes by and rain on the parades. And I know you won't want to hear that stuff. But you gotta embrace and know what the truth is, know what you're dealing with. So as you share the good news, that's why it really is. It's my last thing. You can't understand the fact that it's good until you realize how. Right? You're going to correct your children? You're going to deal with your children? How do you deal? Oh, that's nice you've done that, but let me make a suggestion to you next time. You might consider this. What kind of parent is that? You know, they've just walked out in the street. I remember we were living on 59th Street. I was 5 years old. We had these two camphor trees on our front lawn. One of them's still there. No house there where we lived on 59th. And I was running, and I'd heard this preaching all the time about looking both ways. I was going across to Becky Brown's house, across the street, because she was hauling me. And I ran out in the street, and the next thing I heard was the screeching of tires. I stopped and turned, and the hood ornament on that car was 18 inches from my nose. Had they not been paying attention, I'd be dead. When I got back inside, and my mother had loved me and drawn me close to herself, and how glad she was that I was alive. Then there was a correction of course, I'll just put it that way, that took place that got my attention. And she reinforced what had just happened in the street. Do you understand me? She did that because she loved me. Do we love people? Do we love them enough to speak the truth in love to them and be who we're supposed to be in their lives?